Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Here's the pressing question on everybody's mind, Timory. Are you tired of Christmas music yet?
No, because I just started listening to it the day after Thanksgiving.
Is that the rule?
You know, there was one year where, actually 2 years, when I first moved away from home, where I started listening to Christmas music the day after Halloween. I was actually sick of it by the time Thanksgiving came.
This is one of those things. I feel like a Grinch because I get sick of it real fast.
Oh,
and
you're
part
mean.
Of it is that it starts so darn early, like Halloween. Before that, I feel like it was playing in August. Maybe right. Not August, but
well, a lot of the channels have actually been playing it since the day after Halloween, like radio channels. Actually,
I think there's actually a 24-hour a day, 365 music channel you can find now.
Wow.
With Christmas music all the time.
I mean,
yeah,
you got
much.
Pandora.
Yeah, it's too much. And I did feel like a Grinch. And even, because frankly, my son, he loves the Christmas music. And he's been begging for it since before Halloween. But the rest of us have put the Thanksgiving rule on. And we're like, no. Okay, so we started it the day after Thanksgiving. And he's so happy. And, you know, one day after Thanksgiving, I was already over it. But but I have a bit of science on my side. Check this out. Psychological research right here, Timmer. You know we like to appeal
I'm
to
gonna
this.
I'm going to boo you. Boo.
Playing Christmas music too early. It's just science. Playing Christmas music too early can wreak havoc on one's mental health. It's right here.
Okay.
Better.com.
And NBC I'm just News. Going to throw this out here for anyone listening. It can go both ways, though. It can be really good and not so good. And I think we can talk liturgically about Christmas music as well, which I think is a totally separate conversation. So just hear where it's at and listen to this story. I wish I could say it's bogus, but it's something to think about.
It depends on your experiences as a child is what it boils down to, right? So if as a kid, you really enjoyed Christmas and all of those musical associations that you make were good, then generally Christmas music is good for you. If those memories are not so good, this can be a very traumatic time of year. And I guess, you know what? That's pretty basic. I mean, that makes good sense. The holidays, frankly, are not just the music, but just the holidays in general, very closely associated with your experiences as a kid. And those, of course, are very closely associated with how strong your family is.
Absolutely. And I think it's very basic. I get the science, the neuroscience of it is when you're younger, your prefrontal cortex isn't as developed, making you more emotional. And so your emotional, sentimental connection to certain songs, music, holidays, times of the year are very strong with Christmas music because it's literally the only type of music that we hear consistently for a long period of time every single year. So I definitely get that. So for some, those joyful memories create an association on the level of the brain where you're getting little dopamine hits. Literally dopamine hits the brain, its pleasure reward system is firing. However, what happens for people who are struggling is their prefrontal cortex is actually really struggling because, I guess, honestly, I'm going to use the words, it's emotionally triggering to them because it's emotionally triggering and it then creates issues for that person trying to block out the music. And I get that. At the same time, I think that it is so joyful for people that I think a little consideration is important. But this is with any music.
Yeah. And see, and the thing is, I had a great childhood. I had wonderful Christmases as a kid. So,
yeah.
And you know what? It's not like I'm anti-Christmas music. It's
the Grinch.
It's just too much.
Turning green.
And interestingly, they put out a little warning here. I laugh at this. They put out a little warning for retail workers who are just bombarded with it. So my daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, got her first job not too long ago working retail, and She was out there Black Friday. She's like, it's a zoo, Dad. It's craziness. I've lost my faith in humanity, she said. But she's also bombarded by all the music. And so, you know, keep that in mind. Show a little grace. Can we show a little grace to our retail workers, by the way? Well, like, people are crazy out there.
Right. That's just people interacting in general.
Be nice to the cashier.
I know. Well, even Costco, the Costco gas line, people were insane. I looked at the Costco gas person. I went, what is wrong with people? Shit, it's been all day. This poor lady. But you know, that's the thing, is that Christmas music for many people brings back such joyful memories. Is, I mean, it's even music that I hear people who never sing along to music actually chirping along and whistling to. So again, I don't agree with shutting the Christmas music off, but maybe lowering it for some people, or if it's annoying for some people.
Or how about this? Let's just keep it within Advent. Now, I say that seriously.
Okay,
the liturgical thing, like you were saying, I do think that's important. I think that when the music stretches so far into other seasons that we lose that flow of the liturgical year,
right,
and it makes Christmas less special. Like when Christmas lasts for like 3 months, it's not special anymore. If I could just hear those carols just for a shorter time when we are in Advent,
I
think I'd be fine.
I hear what you're saying. I guess for me, you know what I actually did last year is I waited to listen to Christmas music until Christmas Day or Christmas Eve. If people were playing it, I totally enjoyed it. But I was trying to focus on the spirit of the season of Advent. And Advent really is a period of time like Lent in preparation and penance. You know, people don't talk enough about this, but giving something up for Advent, making certain sacrifices. Every year I take a retreat at the beginning of Advent. I think it's important to prepare for, there's a darkness that is consuming, that apart from the light of Christ, which comes at Christmas each year, there's something we need to recognize that it would have been missing, that is missing in our lives, areas where the light needs to be brought in. And so for me last year, I personally just waited until, you know, Christmas Eve to listen to the Christmas music. But I loved all of those Christmas songs that weren't Christmas songs, but Advent, you know, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And I think we don't know enough of our actual Catholic Christmas songs or Christian Christmas songs.
Yeah.
We know every word to Here Comes Santa Claus or Santa Baby.
Can I just say there's some terrible, Santa Baby. There's
get
some
out
terrible
of here.
Christmas songs out there. Terrible.
I love Christmas music.
All right, we're switching topics here. This is an interesting little piece. Speaking of making sure that you're aligning with the spirit of the season, David Cassidy, a Partridge Family, very famous guy, obviously, passed away this last week at the age of 67.
I know, Don, is that his daughter is Laurel, and I got excited, Laurel from Arrow.
That's correct.
Which, again, I'm depressed that it's just evil Laurel. It's all we have now, just saying.
I can't even keep track of all the Laurels. It seems like there's been 6 or 7 of them. Is this good? Is she bad? Who knows? Arrow jumped the shark a long time ago. I'm just saying.
Stop.
Even though I'm still,
I'm
there with you, but it jumped the shark a long time ago.
It's changed, but it's just good in a different way.
So Laurel, who is David Cassidy's daughter, I didn't even know she was David Cassidy's daughter, actually.
Right.
She came out after he passed away a few days later with a tweet about her father's last words. And here were the 4 words he said before he died. So much wasted time.
Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah. She said, this will be a daily reminder for me to share my gratitude with those I love as to never waste another minute. And she said, thank you.
I see that, but I also can't. To me, it's hard not to be overcome with sadness for David. Like,
right.
Here he is at the end of his life looking back and saying, wow, I wasted a lot of days. I wasted a lot of hours. And here's a guy who really, you know, according to society's standards, reached the top. I mean, what didn't he do? He had the fame. He had all the stuff. How can David Cassidy look back and say he wasted so much time? And how can that, right? I think I haven't been there on the edge of death, but it makes sense to me, and others have said this, that when death is there, you're focused, right? You're focused on, all right, what's truly important? Like the question we sometimes ask in ministry is, if you had 24 hours left to live, what would you do, right? Like, what would you think about? Hopefully you're not going out shopping or something. And most people are like, all right, I'm going to get right with my family or spend some time, right? You're not going to do frivolous things. You're going to focus on what's important. And I think you'd think about what's important. hopefully you're thinking about eternity and getting right mm-hmm. with God. And what was on David Cassidy's mind apparently was, man, I wasted this. That's got to be big. Something that should be on the front of all of our minds.
Well, and something to put it into context, it sounds like they were surrounded by a lot of friends and family at the end of his life. So to all of a sudden actually have something that you maybe didn't have necessarily all your life, it's something beautiful, that end of life experience and the coming together of the family and maybe the reunion or the breaking down of barriers and broken relationships that takes place when a family member dies. While there's a lot of sorrow, there can be a lot of joy, God willing, and celebrating that life. You know, I know a lot of people who have a lot of anxiety surrounding funerals and surrounding death. And I guess in my life, you know, we've had some really, really tough deaths over more recently in our family. But we've also had a lot of really good deaths where we have been able to come together and celebrate that life and celebrate them entering into what hopefully heaven or purgatory, right? And this is where we have to ask, how have you lived? Yeah. How have you lived? And are you proud of or content with how you've lived?
And do you have your impending death at the front of your minds? It's one thing that struck me about sort of the prayers that we as Catholics pray when I started learning them, right? There's actually a lot of talk about death in a lot of common Catholic prayers, right? But it's a great thing.
Right.
Ultimately, keeping that awareness, like, here I am, I'm going to die, and it could be any time. That's very important to realize and to be aware of because it helps you prioritize.
Right. I was speaking at an event recently to a few hundred young adults, and I brought up death, and I talked about, you know, preparation for death, especially St. Alphonsus Liguori's book, Preparation for Death. And their faces were aghast when I mentioned death. And afterward, a lot of people, especially some of the young men, came up to me and said, you made me think about something I've never thought about before. And not that, like, you could die right the second, you could, but am I prepared for that sacramentally, morally, spiritually, with my friendships, with my relationships? When you think in that context, it changes how you live.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Just in the last month, a lot of very famous and powerful people have been warning about one thing in particular. I'm thinking of Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, even Hillary Clinton are all in agreement on this. Artificial intelligence is not something to be taken lightly, and it's very dangerous. All of them said AI is a great danger to us. What do you think?
I definitely think so. I was talking about potatoes the other day, and I don't talk a lot about potatoes. And about an hour later, I pick up my phone and never before use this emoji on my phone. All of a sudden, and your top used emojis is a potato.
What?
It was creepy. My phone was listening to me. It had to have been.
Your top, tell me this again. So you've never used a potato emoji.
No.
And suddenly it appears.
As my top used emojis right there, front and center.
Yeah, I'll admit, I don't have one of those. I mean, we got the phones, and obviously they have the microphone, but a lot of people are putting those, what are they called?
The Echoes.
Things in your house, the Google Home things, where they're listening literally to every word you say.
No way.
And responding. And I'm like, I thought we used to like sweep. Well, I didn't. But, you know, in the movies, you'd sweep your house for bugs because you didn't want anybody listening in. Right. And now not only do we always have the phone, which with its voice recognition and all that stuff, we're actually putting devices in here. Google, please listen to every single thing. Have you heard? I've actually heard a warning from one of the TV companies, Samsung, Vizio. I don't know. Don't quote me on this. I'm not sure which one. But they said, don't have serious conversations in front of your television. because the TV has that voice sensor thing, right? Too, right? It has voice command. So, you know, give me ESPN or whatever, it will do it. But in order for that to work, I don't see, and I'm, you know, maybe I'm not just tech savvy enough. I don't understand how the TV is not listening to every single word you're saying if it recognizes when you tell it, hey, right? It has to be listening all the time.
Absolutely. Well, even like I've been talking a lot verbally about Meghan Markle, you know, the new fiance, the royal engagement, and I've been talking about her coat because I was shocked. One of the trending things online this last week was that her coat was sold out. You could only get it like in one color that wasn't the original color, and it wouldn't be available again until the spring. All of a sudden, because I've been talking about it so much, it has been all over all of my ads. It you is haven't, so funny.
You haven't been searching? Just talking,
no.
You think?
And like I could know. Afford that coat. What, it's like $1,000 coat.
Well, interesting piece in First Things that you found this week about AI and Thanksgiving.
You know, it's so interesting because basically what they're talking about is how artificial intelligence, there are multiple forms of religion that are being birthed out of AI. And this takes us back to this mindset of scientism that is so prevalent right now in our culture, that unless there's a scientific proof for what you are saying in your faith, that it's false. And, you know, now you have different forms of, you could say transhumanism or terrasem, I don't know if I'm saying it right, or Raelians, you know, transhumanism, the new focus now for transhumanism's, you know, mindset is this focus on the immortality of AI and how it can transform you into a god, essentially, uploading that brain into a computer and now robot people.
Yeah, so I'm of two minds of this. On one hand, I sort of understand the people who think that we are just intricate machines, and they think, all right, I'm going to live forever by downloading the information in my brain into a machine, and then I'll just get a new body and upload it. And that's a very materialistic, reductionistic view of humans, which of course is not accurate, right? We're not just computers. We're not all that. But on the flip side, this also makes me wary of people who think that AI is going to take over the world. And some people are welcoming this in that, yeah, we're going to worship that. Like we're basically going to build a program. In fact, there's a nonprofit, a registered religious nonprofit founded by Silicon Valley mega millionaire Anthony Lewandowski called Way of the Future. And it describes its purpose as the realization of a godhead based on artificial intelligence. And this to me, tell me how this is any different than building the golden calf and saying, hey, everybody, this is the god that took you out of Egypt.
Right.
Like you built that. Like you just poured all the gold into the mold and you made that calf. On what possible level of intelligence do you now look at that thing that you just made and worship it?
Yeah, it's a turn from we should be worshiping our creator, and now the creation is basically worshiping exactly what we've created. Like, okay, I just drew this awesome piece of art. Let me hang it in my wall and let me kneel and bow down before it. Like,
that's exactly right.
Have we lost the fact that they're just a bunch of spark plugs coming together, create online memory, and you put the information in from your brain?
That's the thing, Timmy. That's what I don't get. Like, I get if you're a very superstitious person who stumbles upon something in creation and you mistakenly think that it's a god or whatever, like I'm going to worship the tree, but you didn't make the tree. So I almost see that level of idolatry. It boggles my mind to see this level of idolatry when you're the one that wrote the computer program. All right, you wrote it. You created that. You built that thing. In fact, God mocks these kind of people in the Old Testament where he says, you're the one that cut that wood. Like, I can't remember the exact book and verse, but God goes on this long rant basically mocking people saying, yeah, you cut down that tree. You made that slab of wood. You carved it out. And now you're worshiping it. It's like making the point, like, how stupid can you be? Like, you made it. And
you created something that will now be your god, like the golden calf.
Right. The people that think computer programs are self-aware, that's what I don't get. Like, no, they're only aware. I put that in air quotes because you're writing algorithms. You're writing programs that they just do what you tell them to do. They talk about, you know, gathering information, this artificial intelligence. And I get it's sophisticated. I understand. I understand that it can get, but it's still responding to commands. That's what computers do.
Right.
They don't have self-will. They don't have choice. They don't have self-awareness in the sense that humans do. They're not the same as humans. They don't exist without humans. That's why if it ever comes to us, you know, wanting to bow down in front of that computer program or thinking that, you know, the computers are taking over, no, that's only you worshiping something that you yourself made. It's just another form of idolatry, ultimately.
Absolutely. Well, and I think another one of the perspectives, you know, I was reading some of the Tirasem, I think I'm saying it right, is basically this other version of their religion, you could say, where life is purposeful, death is optional, God is technological, love is essential, and their goals are, and I'm reading from this piece here, to achieve unity, diversity, and joyful immortality. And I think about those things. Unity, diversity, and joyful immortality. What do you think about one holy Catholic apostolic church? One holy Catholic, meaning universal, and apostolic, showing that it has roots in a consistent teaching that has been brought down since the beginning of time, from all the way through the Jews and the chosen people into Christianity. You know, there's your history. There's your science. There's your unity. Come on, people, wake up.
Yeah, it is a strange time that we live in, to think that the machines, I guess, but you have to start with the notion that we're a machine, I guess. But are we really? And do you even believe that yourself? Mm-hmm. Right? Like these people that are, you know, espousing the beauties of AI, and even those that are really dangerous, that are really warning about it. I think on both sides, ultimately, you're devaluing the dignity of a human. To right. think that, like, on what basis is AI going to take over my life? Only to the extent that I let it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even, and it is, I mean, computers, yes, they're doing a lot of harm. Like, there's no doubt that the phones have transformed and do a lot of bad. But ultimately, the harm that they do, I mean, I'm sort of allowing that, right? I'm self-aware enough to realize that, yeah, I shouldn't be spending this much time on my phone. And, oh, the time that I can focus has decreased a whole lot since I like, there's still a self-aware, there's a dignity and a value to humans
right.
that allows us to decide whether or not we're going to worship that thing or whether or not we're going to allow it to compute. So those that fear AI, I think, and those that worship AI, on both sides, we need to just step back and say, all right, as humans, we can do better than this.
Well, and this obsession with technology is pointing to this desire for eternal life, but here on earth. And I'm sorry, but you look at the way things are. I think people should understand that this earth is not the promised land. This earth is not the perfection of you. And so people who are seeking, you know, to live forever or to live as long as they possibly can, you see, and it's just sad that there's such a fear or adverse reaction to death. And it's this lack of understanding that we are creatures made to be with our creator ultimately. And the sacramental life is an opening up of heaven on earth. We are in the process of going there, or we are shutting ourselves away from there.
Yeah, the reductionistic view of the world, I think they need to, those that hold to it need to ask themselves a couple of questions. One, why do you want to live forever, for one thing? And two, is that going to be as good as you think it should be?
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timmery on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
I have sort of an evening ritual that I follow before bed, and it involves getting off of all screens and grabbing either a book, but more often just about every evening, a magazine. Like, I don't want to be in the middle of a novel that's going to keep me awake. I'd rather have a little bit shorter articles. So I grab a magazine almost every evening before I go to bed. And it's tough, though. In fact, my wife and I, we used to subscribe to a lot of magazines. We're down to like one or two now. But one that I would encourage that you add is a biannual magazine for young men. It's called Valiant, and you can find it at valiant.osv.com. They are a friend of the show, a supporter of Trending with Don and Timmery, and just a wonderful magazine for young Catholic men. Masculinity is so skewed in our culture. On one hand, you've got like, oh, you need to be this, you know, he-man who treats women like objects. But on the other hand, you've got sort of the pajama boy who needs to be very feminine. Like, isn't there, can we just have some solid Catholic teaching on what it means to be a man? If you are a young Catholic man who wants a good magazine, please go to valiant.osv.com. And we'll talk later about the female version, which is called Radiant, which is also awesome. So, were there any battles over Thanksgiving over food in your house, Timmy?
Over food?
Yeah, what you should eat or anything like that?
Oh, you know what? Food is always a tough one because I have autoimmune disease. So, my mom and sisters have always been so great at helping to make sure I at least have, you know, some meat and a handful of the vegetables that I am able to eat at Thanksgiving. But it's funny because other people don't get it, you know, struggling with food and... So then you have, I think in general, some people, though, do face challenges over food snobbery in their families.
So this is something that I've become more aware of over the years, especially as, one, we've tried to eat healthier, but also as my wife, especially, and even now our kids a little bit, there are so many different like food allergies and food issues in our culture that if you sort of dig into it, there's a lot of chemicals and stuff that go into your food that shouldn't be there. And so this topic has become much more... at my forefront. And so it turns out, so here's what happens, Timmy. So if we're going somewhere where we have to bring the food, my wife will often either bring like healthy food, like vegetables and that sort of thing, or just food that she can eat that's not going to hurt her, right? She's not dependent on the host or whatever, especially if it's a big gathering. We got a bunch of families together. And I've been interested in that. She often sort of gets snarked for this.
Yes, I totally get it.
Oh, there she is with her healthy plate, you know. And there's like this a little bit of attitude that comes with trying to eat healthy.
People think you you're better than them and you can make more money because you can afford it. Trust me, it's so expensive and it's hard.
Well, it is expensive, but what's interesting is we're not the family that makes a lot of money, especially in our circles here in Orange County. So I don't know. It's not even the money thing so much.
It's a choice.
There's a cultural thing, and there's an article at the American Conservative that I pulled up just recently that really pointed towards this, and I thought was actually quite enlightening. I was reading it thinking, oh yeah, I felt a little bit of this. And they talk about the whole notion of being a food snob and how there is in our culture sort of a class warfare thing that happens according to what you eat. And so if you really try to eat, you know, like the grain-fed beef or whatever, or, you know, food that hasn't been sprayed with Roundup before it goes to market and this sort of thing, which is and I grew up on a farm. I don't know if you knew this, Timmy. So I'm aware of how we used to farm and now how people farm today. And that's no small thing, the amount of chemicals that go in. So if you can find, you know, like actual organic food, it's not like something... us food snobs are making up, okay? Like, actually, is it real? Does that make sense? But I can see people listening like, oh, come on now.
Don walks into church on Sunday. Everyone shakes their head. Like, he's one of those organic people.
Are you eating organic again? Even the term organic, right? Like, oh, sure.
It's
you're
a trigger.
One of those people, right?
Well, and it does trigger people. And, you know, I actually take food pretty much everywhere I go because of my autoimmune disease. And even, you know, close people can be pretty rude to me over it. And then some people, you know, I had a friend recently where there's a situation I had to like leave for a little while to go and grab some food, or else I was hungry. And he said something along the lines of, yeah, you know, I make fun of her for a lot of different things. I won't go anywhere near that. And it was one of the first times I had such a strong amount of respect from someone who didn't know all the details, but knew enough to understand, you know, food and the way we eat for a lot of people has to do with good health. And for me, it's required, you know, but this attitude is so interesting that it creates this divide. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the conservatives or the Christian people are all, you know, stuck up on sexual morality. But then also they're the same people who can kind of be really critical about food and the care other people are trying to give for their bodies in a different way.
Yeah, this is what this article brought out, is by Roger. And he points out that for many conservatives, There is a certain defensiveness that they feel from more liberals, let's say. And I'm always hesitant to even use those terms anymore because it's so skewed. But anyway, we'll use them for now. That conservatives are generally, although I don't know if this is true anymore, but in general, you're considered, okay, you're more traditional sexual morality. And when you try to say that, hey, everybody should live like this, right? Like save sex for marriage, don't commit adultery, that the more liberal side of the aisle says, hey, stay out of our business. Who are you to tell me what to do? It's my life. I'm going to make those choices. And there's like a defensiveness that arises. And the conservative response is, hey, we just want health. That's all, right? Like, this is actually good for everyone. This is just living in accordance with reality, right? You're made a certain way. And if you want to live a flourishing life, don't go cheating on your spouse and save sex and all this stuff, right? I mean, stuff we talk about all the time on the show. But interestingly, when it comes to food, basically, the same argument is made towards conservatives, and that same defensiveness arises. So what if I eat a McDonald's 8 times a week, all right? Stay out of my life. It's my life. You be quiet, right? Who are you, you snob? Maybe I can't afford to go to Whole Foods all the time, right? sort of thing. And I do think there is a certain cultural thing that's happened there where eating unhealthy, it's not actually because of the money or anything like that.
It's putting priorities.
It's just the priority. And you're almost taking pride in eating unhealthy food.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not sure what the mindset is below it. But
I think they're more so being defensive when they're, you know, making a big deal about eating unhealthy food. Like, they know I should be eating different, but I can get away with eating this way. And, you know, this is what I do. Kind of just solidifying where they're at. Because we defend things and we know that we probably should be making some changes. And I'm not saying, hey, everyone needs to eat exactly this way. But this criticism, I think it shows not only on the level of food, but in level of politics, all these different areas, people can be so harsh to others. Like, just learn from them. Hear their point of view. Share yours. Have a conversation rather than this judgmental attitude that ostracizes people.
Right. And also, I would say, try to think about these topics in a sort of objective, human flourishing kind of way. Right. Rather than, oh, what does your team say? Oh, well, I'm the opposite of that. Because we do tend to see these certain topics and you think, well, what does my tribe think of that topic? And then we automatically go there. So it could be food where, oh, well, I'm a person who, you know what, a little higher fat, you know, a little more cheap food. That's our style. You know, that's what we do. And if you think that Whole Foods has better food, I don't care. Right. I'm going to go with my tribe. And objectively, could you make some life choices and spend almost the same amount of money and eat healthier? Yes, probably. But we're not thinking that way. We're thinking about what tribe we're in. And I find that a lot of topics fall into this. So, you know, immigration or whatever. Oh, well, what does my tribe think of that? Oh, well, that's what I think. You're not thinking like, well, what's actually human flourishing here? What does the church even teach about this? What actually is a positive? It's more so like, oh, well, I just fall into this category. That's where I'm going to. So we tend to like, I don't know. I think categories are weird. Like, why are we so for junk food and against bad sex when shouldn't we just be for pro-health all the way around?
Right. Well, and I mean, a lot of people are so focused on eating organic, yet they're willing to put any type of pill inside their body for hormonal contraception.
On the other side, the liberal side. Yeah, why are you so focused on health for your body, except when it comes to sex?
Well, and what's interesting is a study I recently saw coming out of France. They saw that a lot of women were not taking the pill because they saw, you know, it's the opposite of this like earthly grounded body attitude. And I think another perspective that kind of is upsetting is that, you know, there's this division that's taking place more often around food, when at the same time, I think food is truly a means of evangelization. And, you know, having struggled with how I can actually interact on an interpersonal level with food is even bigger of a reminder. You know, food is a gift that we can give to other people. It's something that we can share. You know, coming together for a common meal is such an opportunity for a gathering place. You know, you think about the watering hole and how a bunch of the Old Testament patriarchs met their wives at the watering hole. Today, you know, people meet each other, yes, at the bars, but they get to know each other over a meal. And, you know, even at times for me, a lot of the time I have to sit at a meal and I actually don't eat anything, or I have my awkward food bag. I was at a wedding recently and I'm like, I've got it on my lap and I'm, you know, taking little pieces into my mouth because everyone's eating hors d'oeuvres. It's a reminder, you know, we have the ability to commune when we eat. Are we taking that moment?
Yeah. So regarding evangelization, I'd also say that just an attitude of what's best for our health towards the culture, we can add it. So if you're concerned about the sex stuff, right, that's the attitude we should take towards a more liberal culture. And along with that, the whole food thing. So for instance, this French study that you referred to, the reason French women are going off the pill, three main reasons: side effects, it's bad for my health, and I'm not interested in taking medication or hormones if I'm healthy. Right. Well, all of those apply the same to food. And so as Catholics, we can say to those people, in the same way that the Catholic teaching emphasizes your health, it emphasizes your health in all areas. We have what's good for your flourishing here in the church.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Don mentioned at the beginning of the show about Valiant magazine for men, and I just want to continue to emphasize Radiant magazine is such a just a beautiful magazine to have in your hands, to see beautiful pictures, inspiring stories and articles about faith, culture, you know, different places you can find clothes and, you know, modest but exquisitely beautiful clothes. So please check out Radiant magazine. You can find it at our Sunday Visitor. Both Radiant and Valiant are available there.
Interesting headline, Timmery, out of New Zealand. New Zealand man expected to excel in international women's weightlifting. I'm sure that, now that's the folks at some other website writing that in jest, but the story itself, as Pink News in the UK reports, the story itself is actually true. A biological male has entered women's weightlifting and is expected to do quite well.
Well, and he's been approved by the International Olympic Committee, which was a kind of a big deal. You're continuing to see this crossover where men and women are being allowed, especially men, to be allowed to compete in women's sports. And, you know, even if you just look at the top held records in weightlifting, this is an issue when you have the top records for weightlifting in the male division almost doubles the women's. And so even if he's on a lower scale, he's still pretty high up there. And even if he doesn't win necessarily, he's still cutting other people out who have been working and working and working in this area for a long time.
It's sheer insanity. And actually, as you were talking, I just realized, I wonder if we are now in danger of being arrested or fired for using the improper pronoun right there. I noticed you used he.
Oh, I forgot. Well, luckily I'm not a nursing home worker, because if you're a nursing home worker and if you say he, she, and don't say it, you're in trouble.
Or a kindergarten teacher. I noticed there was a teacher recently that got fired and somebody got expelled from school. The stories, they're starting to snowball. Using the improper pronoun now is career ending. So if Timmery's not here next week on Trending, you know why. She used the wrong pronoun.
Oh, brother. You're biologically male or female. You can't live a lie here. And this is, you know, this is for people's own sake, Don. It's not just because other women won't be able to win. But the reality is if a 70-year-old male who thought he was a first grader, really thought he was a first grader, we would not allow him to enter the first grade spelling bee. Nor would we say, take a man whose feet are a size 11, who now thinks that his feet are size 5, women's. We wouldn't suddenly,
not yet,
surgery to alter his feet to size 5 women's so that
that's
he can wear
year.
Size 5 women's.
Just
that's
wait.
Mutilation.
Just wait. That's coming. That'll
that's
be
changing
next,
the
next
function.
Year. Next year on Trending, we're going to be talking about the 7-year-old in first grade.
I'm leaving. I'm walking away.
there was a story. I'm sort of being facetious, but there was a guy. He was like 47-year-old man who was identifying as a 6-year-old girl. in Canada. I believe it was Toronto. Do you remember that story?
I'm sorry, but there are a lot of pedophiles out there. I think that's creepy. Yeah. I think you're endangering children.
Of course.
No questions asked.
Of course, it's the eradication of women and makes sexuality obsolete, obviously, and the whole thing.
We're protecting an endangered species almost. That's, you'd think that people who struggle, truly do struggle with their gender, quote unquote, or biology or whatever, you'd think that they were an endangered species with the way that people are protecting via law, but it's not even protecting, it's harming them.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is such a juxtaposition between that story where it's talking about this guy who's now in women's weightlifting, basically the eradication of male and female, right? Like,
right.
That's the goal there. But on the same day that that's out, you have a New York Times story headlined "The Unexamined Brutality of the Male Libido." Very exclusive headline, isn't it? Well, what do you mean male? What are we talking about here? Like, I mean,
don't you know men are evil,
you know,
and that they harm women?
Well, don't you know there is
women?
No such thing as men, right? I mean, you can't on one hand say that guy can go enter a women's weightlifting, because what you're saying then is there is no such thing as male and female, but then on the next breath say, oh yeah, by the way, men are bad.
That's ridiculous.
What we're saying. We're saying that men are bad. Well, on one hand, it is ridiculous. On the other hand, I sort of get it. Of course, the story here is, just to give you a little context, in the wake of all of the sex scandals that are out, there is a realization that, you know what? The male sex drive can be dangerous for women.
I actually think that's a great point.
It's true.
That needs to be further discussed. You know, they say, you know, all of this sex abuse, one after another, doesn't matter what political platform you're involved in, doesn't matter what industry you're involved in, it's coming out. The thing is that they're saying the one thing that binds all of these people together is their grotesque sexuality, as some people are saying. But the reality is that the author actually brings up some really good points. And I think the one that really, really stood out to me is how men don't feel comfortable talking about, you know, the not even just the morality of sex, but different parts of sexuality. And when you actually start asking them questions, say about contraception, about abortion, and how that relates to their sexuality in all kinds of different areas, that they actually don't really have a response because they haven't really thought about it or been educated to think about it.
No, of course not. What they've been told is sex is, it's like breathing, right? It's like something that should be widely available for you at any second of every day. And the pornography now has so twisted our minds that all women out there are just readily available for you at any time. And so what she should do is have as many orgasms as possible. That's the message they have been presented. Now, what's interesting about this, I find very little to disagree with the whole notion that, listen, unrestrained male sexuality doesn't seem to be a great thing. Of course it isn't, right?
Right.
Of course, if you raise a bunch of guys saying, yes, just think about nothing but sex all the time. Did you see, I didn't even have this story in the stack, but just as a brief note, did you see the U.S., I don't know if it was Air Force, Marines, I'm sorry, I don't have the right part of the service, but up in Seattle, one or two fighter jets were out training and they had the smoke behind them and they made a giant phallus in the sky in smoke. Okay. Real true story. True story. These are fighter pilots, for Pete's sake. This is like highly trained, intelligent men. All it made me think of is if you have so little wisdom, right? So little wisdom that you think that this is going to go over well. And two, that this is what you're thinking about. Like,
Right. Oh,
I'm going to do something in smoke in the sky. And I'm going to make a giant penis in the sky. All right. Very good. Very good. But
good,
you know,
grief.
What? Listen, this is the male mindset that's raised on nothing but porn and sex. I'm sorry that this part is true. But I would like to add, this is not actually new. That if you went, for example, to the Roman Empire, that men were a lot like this as well. Multiple people having sex. Homosexuality was rampant. Slaves were basically there to service your sexual needs if you were a man of means. Women were there for the same thing. I mean, it was a very over-sexualized culture. And men were brutes. Yes. Yes. Not all, but yes. And what changed that was Jesus, right? Like Christianity comes in and elevates women. Elevates marriage. What is the effect of both of those things? the male libido is tamed and put into its proper place. Like the libido is there for a reason, but right. it's not there to just be unrestrained.
Right. And you're seeing a natural sense of shame that's starting hopefully to kick in for people again. So you might hopefully. Not have gotten it from the conservative traditionalists who are in the Catholic faith or the Christians, but all of a sudden there's a shame of look at all that's coming out. But at the same time, I've seen jokes made about it. I was at a family function recently and I saw someone kind of come up to give someone a hug by and kind of tap, like, I'm just going to barely tap you on the shoulder because, I mean, I don't want to be accused of sexual abuse or something. Right. Why are we making a joke about it when, in truth, if this is something that is on men's minds, it's something that we both need to have conversations about and not just act on. And it makes me think about all the priests I've heard from who tell me they actually recommend in the confessional to the young men listening to Trending, because we talk about what you're thinking about and we give a sense of morality and perspective and an outlet even for you to dialogue with us on these topics. I can't tell you how many people reach out and we have long moral conversations about sexuality. That's good.
Yeah, it's not good to just repress it, right? On one hand, well, we're not going to talk about it anymore. And on the other hand, you have a culture that is just feeding these young men nothing but pornographic images. No, we got to talk about it.
Right.
And when we talk about it, we need to introduce the traditional Catholic teaching on it. That's the answer to this dilemma. It's not, by the way, just as a little side note, it's not giving up on that Catholic teaching and say, oh, well, the culture is where right. it is. We're going to go to you. No, no, we have the answer. We have human flourishing. In closing here, as you look towards the end of the year and your charitable giving, making sure that you get your tax-deductible donations in before the end of the year, may we ask you to pray about and encourage you, in fact, to donate to the 501c3 that operates this show. It's Don Johnson Evangelistic Ministries, and you can make a donation to keep us on the air at donjohnsonministries.org or trendingdt.com.
From the studios of Relevant Radio,
this has been Trending with Don and Timory.
Trending.
To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.